Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let's give a rousing welcome for our warm-up speaker, Luann.
Got to bring my phone up here because I tend to talk too long, so I'm going to look at it occasionally. Hi, my name is Luann, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Luann.
Hello.
Hello.
And by the grace of my higher power, who absolutely works through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had to have a drink since May 14th of 2006. And that's a miracle in and of itself. I started drinking when I was fairly young, and I don't have a story that has a lot of drama in it, because honestly, I was raised in a house full of unconditional love and joy and fun, and sometimes I feel like I got a lot more than I deserved back then. But my dad was a Shriner, and I don't know if you know any Shriners, but they know how to drink. And so drinking was always in my youth as I was growing up. You know, they had gin fizz breakfasts and crab feeds, and my dad was the bartender, and I was the server, even at, you know, 7, 8, 9. And so drinking wasn't ever optional to me. It was just a matter of when I was going to drink. And I think I took my first drink. I remember it was when I was around 13 or it was junior high, so whatever that is. And even from that moment, when we drank peppermint schnapps in an abandoned building, even from that very moment, I never was the one who could stop drinking. Like, I drank that time until I barfed, and that was how I drank, always. And there wasn't that thing in me that stopped. So what stopped me was either I got sick, or I passed out, or other people were making me stop. And that was all through high school. You know, when we would party, drinking was fun. I drank because I had a lot of fun, and I like fun. I still do. And so all of those days, even though it was ugly and I would be on, you know, I would get lost drinking at parties, and I would end up on like my high school's football field with no pants on, and I don't remember what happened. For some crazy, well, it's because I'm an alcoholic, some crazy reason thought that was still fun. I would still laugh the next morning and took a little, you know, pride in it. It's kind of sick. And then I grew up in the same town, and after high school and all that partying, all my friends grew up, and they started going to college and having a life of their own. And that's kind of like where my arrested development happened. You know, I continued to drink. They were making adult choices and moving on with their life, and I stayed in Luann land, and I drank as much as I wanted to, and I made my own decisions, and I was functional. But what that looked like, because in Luann land, I got to decide what was right and wrong at all. I never gave anybody any options or any opinions in that. So I got to decide where that line of morality was, and that line started getting really dark. You know, it started going really backwards in my life. And I don't really know when drinking started to take from me. I always felt like drinking was adding to my life. And I don't know when. I moved to Salt Lake, and that was when I can pinpoint when drinking became planned, because it's a very dry state. And so if you wanted to drink, you had to have your house stocked up really well. So that required, you know, planned trips to the liquor store. And my house was always stocked up really well. And if I felt the need to go to the liquor store, I would have a nice house cleaning. And the house cleaning meant that I ended up somewhere in the house, passed out completely. And I thought that was funny. People around me wasn't, you know, they weren't thinking that this was as fun as I did at the time. And many, many people were trying to warn me that my drinking was getting out of control. And as I was the queen in my life, I decided those people needed to get out of my life. And so Luann land started to become a lot smaller, you know, an elite group of toxic people, but people who allowed me to drink the way I did. And, you know, my story, I have all kinds of embarrassing drunk stories. I ended up in management, which entitled me in my head to drink a lot more. And so I have memories going. I have memories going to big corporate functions with, you know, high mucky mucks, and I was the one that was the story the next day. You know, I would go to breakfast, and I was the one. People would be like, oh my gosh, she's here. I can't believe she woke up this morning. And even at the time, there was a part of me that was pretty demoralized about that, but not enough to stop drinking. I kept thinking that if I could, you know, as we just heard, if I could just figure out a way to drink like those other people who were still having such an awesome, fun time at the bar and woke up the next morning without, you know, the shame that I had to do. I had to walk through shame every morning when I went to functions like that, let alone with my family. I mean, there were so many evenings or mornings the next day where nobody in my family would look me in the eye. And I didn't know what happened because I was a blackout drinker. And I to this day, I don't know a lot of those stories, and I don't really want to know because I live my own hell. You know, I had to get to the point where, and this was like 4 years before I actually decided to really take steps to stop drinking, because every morning I would wake up and I would promise myself and everybody in my family that that was it. And I would pour out whatever liquor I had left in the house, which wasn't a lot. And swear with like every fiber of my being that that was it. I'm not going to drink. This is it. I'm not going to drink today. And every day after work, I would somehow in my crazy Luann Land thinking, my car would automatically make it to the liquor store. And I would get more than I ever needed to get blacked out drunk that night. I had two children, and I missed out on 6 years of their childhood. Where I was blacking out. My job was to come home after work and put the kids in their bath and read them their bedtime story. When they were in the bath, I was already drinking my wine. By the time they were done with their bath, I was at least a bottle and a half in. And by the time it was bedtime story, gosh, that's the hardest part of my story. I read maybe 4 or 5 pages of every bedtime story, and I passed out every single time. And the next morning, my kids are so sweet, they're so innocent, and they said, Mom, you fell asleep again reading to us. And they didn't know I was either blacked out, sometimes I finished the book and didn't remember it, or I completely passed out on them while we were having what was supposed to be, you know, memories. And I regret that, but I don't regret it enough to look upon it, because those were all the steps that I had to go through, that hellish cycle I put myself through ended up being my biggest blessing. Because if I hadn't gotten to the point where my life was such complete hell, inside, you know, I kept everything kind of held together lightly, and it wasn't held together firmly, but inside, I was living a life that I did not want to live. I didn't want to be this person that caused so many people shame. I didn't want to be the person that my kids were thinking, you know, they didn't know what was wrong with me, but they knew that, you know, your parents don't walk into a campfire, you know, without their shoes on. So they knew something was definitely off, but I started to do the, you know, I'm going to quit. I started to make those promises to everybody. And I actually went to a couple AA meetings. And for whatever reason, my higher power didn't, you know, that wasn't it for me, because I found every reason to not see myself in the speakers at any of the AA meetings that I went to. And that kept me drinking for 2 more years. And my ego at the time and my anger at the time only wanted to get me into an outpatient rehab, because I didn't want to go to an AA meeting, and I was sure somebody would see me if I went to an AA meeting that knew me. And to this day, I've been sober for 10 years, there's only one person that I knew from my former life that I've ever seen in an AA meeting. And at the time I thought, oh, everybody's going to know who I am. It's so ridiculous. I definitely needed an ego deflation. But fast forward to getting sober, because that's when life really began for me. I went to a rehab. I did everything that they wanted me to do. I peed in the cup. I went to all the counseling. I even went to these AA meetings that they told me I had to go to. I stayed sober for 6 months, and then I graduated. And in my head, in my Luann Land thinking, I graduated, and therefore I should be able to drink like a normal person. So I was at a wedding, and I had flown to Arizona for a wedding with my two kids. They were only 6 and 8, And they were passing around the toast to give to the bride and the groom, and they had, you know, two platters, and one was a little inch full of champagne and the other was an inch full of apple cider. And in that moment, like, that's when my alcoholism had a very discernible voice and a demonic personality in my life, because I, clear as a bell, heard it say, "You can have that champagne. You're good. You did what you were supposed to do. You can have it." And I did. And I took the champagne, and within 30 minutes, I left my kids at the wedding reception with people I did not know, and checked into the bride's room and put two bottles of wine on her tab. And that began a six-week bender. I don't remember getting home. I don't know how I flew home. I don't know how I got the kids put together. But that began 6 weeks of complete darkness, where I didn't know what I was doing. I think I was pretty much in a blackout that whole time. It was ugly. It was scary. I felt possessed by this alcoholism that I had no control over whatsoever. And that was the best thing that ever happened to me in my disease, because it scared the crap out of me. And I needed that huge level of fear in my life in order to finally admit that I can't do things my way. If I'm gonna make this work, it's not about when can I drink again. It's about figuring out a way to live my life without ever drinking again. And that was a thought that really scared the pants out of me, because I didn't know how to live life. I didn't do anything sober. I didn't celebrate sober. I didn't grieve sober. I wasn't angry, and I was angry so much, but I wasn't angry sober, and I wasn't bored sober. I didn't know how to live my life at all without alcohol. And so I had to find a sponsor that I knew had it, that she had something that I wanted. And it was ability to go through the highs and lows of life without touching a drink. And it just didn't make sense to me. But I was willing to do whatever she wanted me to do. I was that scared. And she walked me through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in my own time, which took for me 3 years to actually get through all of them, because we were really thorough. And I'm so thankful for that. I'm so thankful that I was able to get through each step thoroughly, because it set a foundation for an amazing life. A life that I absolutely had no idea was out there waiting for me. I chased it with alcohol, and I had no idea that that happiness that alcohol used to give me in the beginning of my drinking was so available to me, but then magnified by 100 times. This life that I have, the promises have all come true for me in a way that's I can see it every single day. I wake up every single day in life. You know, life isn't giving me like this amazing day in front of me every day. It's given me the ability to look at everything in a totally different way. I never took personal responsibility for anything when I was drinking. The reason why I drank was everybody else's fault. It was because I had to work, and my job was stressful, and this person pissed me off, and the kids were, you know, driving me nuts. And so I used everybody else as an excuse for me to drink myself into oblivion, and then got to this program and was able to see, you know, as a control freak, and I think that a lot of alcoholics are control freaks. I know I am. Giving up that control to something that I didn't quite have a trust in was really hard for me. But I saw everybody else doing it, and so I kind of thought, well, maybe I can do that a little bit. And so slowly but surely, that's why it took me 3 years, I started a relationship with a higher power that wasn't lip service to me any longer. You know, I wasn't just going to the church I grew up in and saying what they told me to say. And this was actually saying, you know what, if you are who you are, then make it work for me. I will do whatever you want me to do, putting aside my own desires. And when I do that, when I work these steps in every part of my life, problems disappear. You know, the problem might not, you know, like, I had to go through everything in my life that looks bad from the outside perspective. I've had to go through sober. I got sober, and then I had to go through a divorce, and I had to lose my house, and I had to lose my dad, and I had to lose my sister and my grandma, and all of these things I didn't have to deal with when I was drinking. But God gave me a way through these steps to see that I can put light into every dark situation. And that's something I can do. I choose that. I can take any tough situation and make it worse, or I can choose to make it better. I can see my part in, you know, anything that's going wrong in my life. I get the control to say, okay, I see what I'm doing wrong, and I'm going to fix that. Not because, you know, this other person is right or wrong, but because I know that I get to live a life that's free. And it's a choice I get to make every single day. And I didn't have that choice before because alcohol took that from me. And, you know, if you're in a place right now where you're new in sobriety, there's just so much hope if you will let us help you. You know, we've been where you're at. There's someone in this room that has gone through whatever you're going through, I guarantee, and they've done it without drinking. Use us. But if you've been sober for a long time and you're not feeling happy, joyous, or free, I just encourage you to go back. The answers are in these steps every single time. You know, if you're struggling with anything, get with somebody you trust and work these steps to the best of your ability. And my experience has been just absolute magic, that it lifts from me, or I know how to, you know, that the part of the program where, I mean, the promises where it says you intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle you. It happens to me every day, and it's not me, you know, it's not me solving a problem. It's my higher power working through me because I'm willing to let my higher power work through me. And I wasn't before. And when I used to pray to my God to get sober in my days before drinking, what I was really praying for was to be able to drink like a person who could have one or two drinks. And that, to me, was my perfect example of my will getting in the middle of God's will. Because God's will for me is to just not drink at all. And in order to do that, I have to be in these steps all the time, every day, with every problem. But I get the reward of a life that is so happy and not free from problems, but so happy in the middle of those problems. What does it say? That I can match calamity with serenity. And those answers are found in this book every single time. So I think I spoke long enough. And I'm really excited for the woman who's going to speak after me. Now, her story is earth-shattering, so I hope you're ready for a good one. And I'm going to end it here. Thank you very much for being here.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let's give a rousing Tulare County welcome for our featured speaker, Kimmy.
I have a little over 12 years of sobriety. My sobriety date is September 21st, 2004. I'm going to share with you what it was like, where it took me, and where I am today. But before I do that, I just want to say this because this is a part of me and my story. I give all the honor and glory to Jesus Christ, my higher power, who I call God.
Amen.
I was born and raised in Visalia in 1959. There's four children in my family. I am the youngest. And I say this because it gets part of my story as I grew up. When I was like 6, 7 years old, I remember little things, which I'm sure my grandchildren now remember things about me, regarding my parents. They drank a lot. And my mother was a nurse. She worked night shift. My father was in mortgage. He had his own real estate company in Visalia. And he did a lot of entertaining his clients at nighttime. So my sister Sandy, who's 5 years older than me, she was pretty much our babysitter and our mother at the same time. She raised my brother and I. But the bad thing about that in my own head was, as I was growing up, when I got into like my junior high, I was little Sandy Ross's little sister, Kimmy. I really never was Kim Ross. I was always Sandy's little sister. And that always stayed in my head as I got older in my drinking. The first time I really remember getting drunk was at my sister's wedding reception at the Depot restaurant. I was 13. My friend Melinda was with me, and we went around drinking all the leftover beers that were in the beer cans or if there was wine. We drank anything and everything, and it was the worst time of my life that next day. I had the worst hangover, but like Luann said, that didn't stop me. No, I was like 13. When I was 15, I met a boyfriend of mine, my first boyfriend, Leo. I ended up marrying him 5 years later. We dated about 5 years, but during those 5 years, he worked at a liquor store, so it was very convenient. We got a lot of cases of beer or kegs. We went to a lot of parties. I was cheerleader at Mount Whitney High School. WH. A lot of good times, a lot of fun times, and my story is similar to Luann's, not take anything away from her, but we did a lot of partying, and we did a lot of, I personally went overboard. You know, I'd be sitting in the back seat of a car, and someone give me one of those 30 packs of Big Red gum. I'd have that all chewed within 10 minutes. I mean, I chewed it one after another. And I mean, I was just one after another. And then we drank the wine, the green bottle, Easy Nights. Well, it wasn't that easy, because I drank like 8 of them at home. It wasn't easy mornings either. But I have a lot of good memories in high school, even though my parents weren't really active in my activities. I was very involved. I was the first girl at Mount Whitney High School to play on the water polo team. I played softball. I was a very active person, and my parents never really made it to any of my games or never really saw any of that. That brought on a lot of resentments. But I didn't know what resentments were until I got into sobriety, and that was many years later. So as I was growing up, I got married. My husband, Leo, and I had 3 children. And I'd say probably in our 12th year of marriage, his mother was diagnosed with cancer. And within about 5 months, she passed away. And it was really hard on both of us. We never lost anybody that we loved so much and we were very close to. She was like one of my best friends. It was really hard. But I didn't drink that much back then. I was, you know, younger. I didn't really start drinking until Leo and I decided to get a divorce. And that was when I was around 30. We've been married 12 years. And I got my first DUI within that first 3 months of that divorce. Left lums. Got there at 5, left at 5:45, and got a DUI. That tell you how much I drink? I was going down Locust Street and thought I was on Court Street, so I was going the wrong way. In the fog. And the officer pulled me over and he said, "Young lady, do you realize you're going down the road the wrong way?" And I said, "Well, if I knew that, do you think I would have done it?" So that was my first DUI. And so I thought it was just a mistake. You know, things happen to people. You know, it happens. I won't let this happen again. So after that, within the next year, I started dating a younger man, and we partied real well together. It was a lot of fun. We used to go to Lum Lums when I got off work. I too was in mortgage. I worked at the mortgage company. I was senior processor at a loan company, and it was very high-strung and very stressful. So that was my excuse to drink. Yeah. We'd party and do things and other stuff, and it just really got out of hand. We broke up, and then a few years later, I met my next husband, and we drank a lot together. We would go to work. He was a contractor, built homes, and I did all the loans. And we'd come home, and we'd talk shop and drink. And we'd drink. And we had a home in the front and a mother-in-law's quarters in the back, and it had a big refrigerator in it. So unlike Luann's story, you had to stock up. We had a liquor store, a 4A liquor store right down the street, but we always had alcohol in the house. I could drink a 30-pack in one night, no problem, and wonder where the beer went. You know, and I'd be stashing it so nobody would get it. So I'm putting it in the front refrigerator because nobody wanted to walk up to the front house because we always hung out in the back area by the pool in the back house. So I'd always stash them and hide them in like the crisper box. And my daughter, I remember she was 17 years old, and she would say, why do you drink around in that with that red cup? So I always pour my beer in a red cup. I didn't want anybody counting how many beers I was drinking or how much I had. So I always had it in the red cup. To this day, I don't like drinking out of red cups because it's really memories, because I remember distinctly her asking me, why are you hiding it? And it never dawned on me because I got a problem. Never thought about it like that. Made promises. I will stop. I remember on a Mother's Day, I made a promise to my 7-year-old daughter, my youngest daughter, I'll quit smoking, I'll quit drinking. And that lasted maybe 4 days, 5 days, and I was drinking again. These are things that I'm not real proud of, but I'm sharing with you because if you're new here, I just want you to know how bad it really can get. Even though in my mind it wasn't that bad, until it gets better, I'll tell you some more of the story in a minute. You know, I didn't think it'd be possible to get any worse. So during this marriage of 7 years with this man, we drank a lot. That was really mostly the main thing we had in common. We ended up getting into divorce. I ended up seeing that old boyfriend again, start hanging out with him, that young boyfriend that I was with. At that time, though, I got into some trouble, and I was with him, and we did some things that were not acceptable, and they were against the law, and I was arrested. I did some time out of Bob Wiley's, came out, and was on a monitor, and I got a job. Well, I actually went for a job interview with the monitor on, and I ended up talking with the lady for almost 3 hours. She hired me. And I worked there for 3 years. It was probably one of the best jobs I ever had. Giant automotive dealership. Loved my job. I let that boyfriend come back for the third time in my life, a few years later. Within 3 weeks, I was late to work 4 times in 1 week. One time I don't even know where my car was. The following week, I had bought a new truck from the dealership. Within 4 days, he had totaled it. And all this happened within just like a couple of weeks, and I kept saying there's something wrong with me, something wrong with me. I even went into my boss's office, and she said, you maybe got a drinking problem. You should, you know, maybe go to AA. No, I'm okay. I got it under control. She said that was the worst thing she ever had to do was let me go, because she knew I was good at my job. I loved it. It was fun. And the good news is even later down the line, I can go in there and put my head up. Even though all the stuff that's happened to me, there's just such neat people there, and I'll leave that alone. So I let this boyfriend back in my life, and I got into some trouble with him. And I had what you call suspended time. I got 6 years. What is joint suspension? Yeah. Thank you. You're special. Joint suspension. If I get in trouble again, I will do 6 years. Prison. Well, I kept my nose clean, and even after I got fired from a giant automotive, I'd never been fired from a job before. Never. I was senior processor at GMAC Mortgage. Don't you know who I am? Get fired from a job. Oh, how degrading. But it happened, and that's my story, and I wouldn't change it for anything because it brought me up to where I am today. I was living in the garage of my mother's house. Let me back this up. My father passed away of cancer, and it was really hard on our family. And here we go again. Another death that I really didn't know how to deal with. I always believed in God, but I just didn't walk with God. I never experienced any of the blessings or the teachings, or I didn't know anything about it. I just knew I knew there was a God. My father died on February 3rd. And I remember going to the cemetery and taking my beer in there and getting so drunk that I would pass out, and they would lock the gates on. You know, they shut the gates at night. And I'd wake up and the water's going and the windows are down and it's coming in on me. Oh, my God. You think you'd know you had a problem, you know, and you walk inside the cemetery, okay? The reason I say this date, February 3rd, is because as I get into my story, well, let's get into it right now. I broke that joint suspension. I got arrested. I was at my mother's house. I wasn't working. I don't even think I could pass a drug test, let alone an alcohol test. I drank every day. I had this new friend I met, maybe knew her for a couple of weeks, and she's my new drinking partner, and she called me one day and she said, I need a ride from Exeter. No, she didn't say that. She said, I need a ride. Can you come get me? And I said, I can't. I got to take my mom to work to Exeter. She said, well, I'm in Exeter. I said, well, how convenient. I'm thinking, oh, she can drive me around. She's not drinking today. She's dry today, so I can drink. So I got opened up and I went and got her. I went to Exeter and she was there and, you know, she wasn't drinking. She was doing something else because we were there for like 4 hours. How much beer I can drink in 4 hours? Oh, my land. I was hammered. It was like 1:30 in the afternoon. We got to go. I told her, we've got to go to Tulare because I got to go to my daughter's house. She's getting married soon. And her wedding dress was in the master bedroom and her husband's, her fiance was out of town working and he was going to come home and she didn't want him to see the dress. So I told my friend that I had to go by the house to get the dress so we can move it so he wouldn't see it. She goes, well, can we go to the Bank of America first? I need to cash a check. Sure. Can we stop at the liquor store first, though? I come out of here. I can't fill that red cup up. So we did that and then we went to the bank and the drive-thru was closed that day. It was just a really, I'm just telling you the truth, it was a God shot. I don't know. It was a God shot. The drive-thru was closed. It was September 20th. It was like 102 degrees out. This person that I was with, she said, you better come in with me because it's just too hot and I got to cash this check. And I said, okay. So walk up everything and we go into the bank together. And I go in and I'm sitting in the bank. It's so nice and cool in there. I'm looking at the newspaper looking for jobs. Like, I'm really looking for a job. Yeah. I was hammered. You know, I'm saying hi to everybody. I don't know where. So this friend of mine is cashing this check and the teller calls me over and I'm going, I go over there and she says, it's going to be a few minutes, we have to verify the funds once you and your friend go have a seat. So this friend of mine says, well, I'm going to go back out to the car, I got to call my mom, I'm going to be late and I need to talk to my mom. And I said, sure, you got the keys, go ahead, I'll just sit here and wait. Well, within about 5 minutes, I see a woman and a man, police officer, come into Bank of America and I'm sitting there and they're walking like right towards me. I'm like, oh, hey, how's it going? Oh, looking for a job. I'm cool. I took a shower today, okay? Minding my own business. And they asked me if I was cashing a check. I said, sure, my friend and I are here. We're cashing a check. Yeah, yeah. They arrested me right there for cashing a forged and stolen check. I said, well, my friend's out there in my mom's car. We go out in the parking lot. There's not a car in the parking lot. So I'm in Tulare, in the jail in Tulare, and I really remember this really well. As hammered as I was, I remember the officer saying, how did a nice gal like you get in a place like this? Mm-hmm. And my head took me, how nice do you have to be? Just because I'm clean, you know, I took a shower, you know. Mm-hmm. I really got this judgmental thing going on. I'm not an alcoholic. What are you supposed to look like? You know, and he's looking at me like, kind of shaking his head. But he was so nice. I said, I got to get a hold of my daughter. This woman took my mom's car. He was listening to my whole story. Jeez, he's like, well, I've never heard this before. But he was so nice. He was so nice. He finally found my daughter. She's working in Exeter. She works at a bank also at the time. And she was doing some training and got a hold of her. And I got to talk to her. And she said, don't worry, Mom. You'll go to court tomorrow. We'll get you out. We'll take care of it. So I go to court the next day, and my mom's in the audience, I call it an audience. And I went up and asked the judge if I get OR. Am I saying that right? Oh, yeah, OR. And he says, no, young lady, don't you realize you're looking at a third strike? I said, excuse me? And he's, yeah, when you got in trouble a few years ago, it was like 4.5 years, you had two silent strikes. Well, my lawyer didn't tell me that. Well, it turns out my lawyer is now on drugs. I don't even know where he's at. So that's just crazy. You know, oh my gosh. You know, where's this freaking murder? Anyway, that's a whole other story. So I mean, my knees buckle, and I'm thinking, 25 to life? You gotta be kidding me. Don't you know who I am? Seriously, I'm just little Kimmy Ross. Katie Ross's little sister. I went back to Bob Wiley's.
Oh, that's funny.
And it wasn't fun. I went back to Bob Wiley's. And I remember opening the Bible, and I came to Jeremiah 29:11. And I remember reading it and saying to myself, I trust you know the plans for me. My sister said, what's the backup plan? What's the backup plan? But seriously, it was really, really scary. I wouldn't want anybody to have to go through that, not knowing these little steps that I took over these years of my drinking, where it escalated and where I went over the line. I wasn't having fun anymore. It used to be fun. It's not fun anymore. And this is really scary stuff. It's embarrassing. My youngest daughter never wrote me one letter. I ended up going to prison. Obviously, I didn't get 25 in life. I'm standing here telling you the story. I ended up getting my joint suspension, which was the 6 years. But I had already done some time prior to that when I had that monitor and then did jail time. So I ended up doing 9 months fighting my case at Bob Wise, and I ended up doing 21 months. And, it's been 12 years and I'm getting old. 10 months. Thank you, Chowchilla. Yeah, Chowchilla. Chowchilla was another experience, but... it was the best thing that ever happened to me. It truly was. Again, like I said, my daughter didn't write me any letters, and my oldest daughter would come see me, or my mom would come see me once a month. The good news out of that, my daughter and mom bonded. They drove, they talked, they were together. Brought them closer. And I remember my daughter telling me, my oldest daughter saying, she might not ever talk to you again. You're going to have to accept that. Well, we say that a lot in AA, accept. And I surrendered. That day I remember saying, she doesn't ever talk to me again. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. Didn't turn out that way, though. I came home, and my daughter had her first child, who was born on February 3rd, the same date that my father died. February 3rd, the day I went to prison. February 3rd, my daughter married Brian, whose birthday is February 3rd, and then we have a grandson, February 3rd. So that February 3rd really was ugly, but it turned back around, full circle. My grandchildren have never seen me drunk. My oldest grandson knows the story. He knows I've been to prison. I don't tell him all the drunk logs and all that and all the stupid stuff I did. Like when I had my pants off at the cemetery and I don't know why. But they do know. They do know how serious drinking and driving, or drinking if you can't stop. I have addictive behavior. Even to this day, I meet with my sponsor, and she'll say something like, "I was wondering when you're going to get to. I'm wondering when you're going to remember that, or I'm wondering when you're going to think about that." Mm-hmm. I always think about what's going on because she taught me a lot of good things, and she taught me to read the big book. She taught me that steps are important. She taught me, fellowship is important. She taught me to take care of me before I take care of others, which I have a hard time doing because I like helping everybody, especially my grandchildren. But I know when enough is enough because I know it's not healthy for me. There's just certain things that my personality, I know what's good for me and what's not good for me. AA has been really, really rewarding for me. I never thought I'd say, oh yeah, I'm going to an AA meeting. No. I thought maybe I'd go into a meeting for the mortgage company. We did a lot of meetings, and we did a lot of drinking, too. But to say that I was going to go to an AA meeting, or even say that I was going to prison. Oh, my gosh, I was Beaver Cleaver Mom. I used to take my kids to school in the wagon. I was PTA president. Don't they know who I am? Seriously. I don't know what I'd do without AA. It's very important to me. The steps, like Luann said, I utilize them daily, sometimes. several times during the day. I reach out, I communicate with people in the program. I got a wonderful sponsor who's a great example. I've sponsored in the past. I'm wanting to sponsor in the future. Keep that in mind. I made a comment about being Sandy Ross's little sister. I'm proud to be Sandy Ross's little sister. I love my sister. She's wonderful. She took care of us. She was the mom that we didn't have. My mother was a good mother. She just worked night shifts, so she was gone a lot. I can't say that about my dad. He drank a lot, and he was a mean drinker. He was not a good drinker. He quit drinking, though, in his early 60s. And then he ended up having cancer, like I said, and passed away. So I got a good 10 years out of my dad that he wasn't really that asshole that he used to be. And I'm going to use that lightly because he just wasn't a good drinker. He was nice to everybody but our family. And it just amazed me how you could be like that. I had a boyfriend. He used to ask me, why are we smiling at everybody? Well, I have eye disease. I don't see real well. I have macular degeneration, so I can't really see your face. I know that's you, Terry, because I've seen you lots of times, and I know what you look like. But it's hard for me to distinct that. So I just smile. It's a natural instinct to smile, because I wouldn't want not to smile, and I know the person. What do they say? Well, she's rude, you know? And so I just do that a lot. And I think that AA has really brought that smile out in me. Even though I know to do this naturally because of my eyes, AA has a lot of good stuff for me. And I hope it has it for you. I've got a lot of good friends in here. I met one tonight. So many people. They're just so nice that I've never met before. And everybody has a story. Nobody's story is the same, but a lot are similar. I know that. But I would hope that I would be able to encourage somebody not to get in a mess like I did. If you think it can't happen to you, it can. I never thought that would happen to me. Never in 1,000 years. But it did. And you know what? It's brought me to where I am today. I'll tell you where I'm at today. I'm married, and I met my husband at an AA meeting. And I remember going to that meeting, 12 o'clock faithfully, and I'd see him there, and he just moved to town, and he would wham, wham, wham. I say to people, no, nobody's nice around here. Not that, yeah. There's no nice. After the meeting, he's washing dishes, and I say, hey, do you think maybe you're nice to people? You might be nice back. So he pondered on that for about 2 weeks, and I happened to see him at a speaker meeting at the neighborhood church. And there was a lot of people there. And I happened to bump into him. And I said, I'm not going to the Sunday meeting tomorrow. I'm doing something with my grandchildren. Well, I'm not going either because I'm going to Springdale. I said, man, that would be really nice to go sometime. But I don't drive that well, you know, so I just don't go that way unless somebody's taking me. I had gone all the way across the church to go use the restroom. And he had left. Out of the blue, I'm walking and walking and walking over. And here I see him in this one shirt, and he comes up, and I said, you know what, I probably should have given you my phone number. Maybe you can take me to a meeting sometime. And he handed me his phone number. Another God shot. Who would have guessed? Out of 1,000 people, he was like right there. It was so weird. And so he pondered on that thing about being nice. He's still working on it.
Yeah.
He's not here tonight, so I can say that. But you know, we mix real well because he works a good program. He does. He works. He reads his big book. He does his daily devotions every day. People have their issues. You're going to have married couples are going to have your issues. People who date, you're going to have your issues. But if you're willing to look at your part at what's going on, it sure makes your life a lot easier. And it's easier to make amends when you own up. I'm not perfect to live with. It gets water on the counter and I freak out. That's one of my pet peeves. I come home with the groceries and I go put it on the counter and there's water on the counter. I just don't like that. But you know what? But if that's the worst thing he does, okay, come on. Pretty good guy. I mean, he does everything else. So I met my husband in AA and I never thought I would meet my last husband at an AA meeting. And I met him right at a good time because my mother We were married not even a year. My mother was diagnosed with cancer. We took her to a doctor. They said, take her home, take care of her. This is my mother, who's a nurse. She knows she doesn't want to do chemo. She lived 5 weeks to the day. And every day, my husband would come home from work, and he'd bring her a card and a lottery ticket.
Oh.
Yeah. She never won big, but, you know. She did win big. She went to heaven. That's the best thing. She didn't suffer that much. But he was there with me to help me through it. I didn't do well when my dad died. And I remember sitting on the end of my mom's bed saying, I promise you, I'm not going to drink when you pass away, like I did with Dad. And she goes, oh, sure, you drink when Dad dies. But what? Oh, big glory with you. You know, I'm glad I was able to be sober to be there for my mom. And my grandchildren were there with me to see me take care of my mom. And my husband was supportive. And my family was there. My sister Sandy was there. My brother Warren was there. My sister Donna was there. We were there. And we're all sober. It was nice. That sounds kind of icky, but it was nice. They know me. She died. She died. She died in February. We said, don't die on February 3rd, okay? She died February Friday the 13th, like today. Yeah. So these things come back in my head, Friday the 13th. It was a real struggle when my mom died. She was like my best friend, and I did a lot of things with her. I remember sitting at the table reading the newspaper with her. We used to have coffee, just hang out. It's hard losing somebody you love. But you know, I can walk through it today gracefully and know that she's proud of me. I didn't drink when she died. Trust me, I wanted to, but I wanted to, but I didn't want to. And that's the only time I started having drinking dreams. I never had those all those years. And I don't know if she struck home and she said, oh yeah, you drink when Dad died, but not me. And then I started having these drinking dreams. And I wanted to numb the feeling that I was having. That's why I wanted to drink. Not because I wanted to drink. To drink. I just didn't want to feel that bad. Nothing is that bad to drink if you're not good at it. Don't do it. It's just not worth it. I don't think it's worth it anyway, and I'm really glad for AA, and I'm really glad for the steps, and I'm really glad I'm here to share my story and tell you about it, and hopefully you'll hear something. That's about all I have. Well, go ahead.
I have a question. Sure. Why don't you tell them about what the opportunity you had of opening up a...
Well, I missed that little window of opportunity to tell. Being a two-striker and high risk, I wanted to open a recovery home, and they weren't going to let me. The FBI said, no, 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 we're not going to let you. And I kept putting the application in, and it kept getting denied. And on the fifth try that I applied, Tulare County called me and said, we'd like to get together with you. And two of my lady friends and myself put a package together and submitted an offer to open a recovery home, transition to new life. And it actually happened. I never thought it would go through. It did. My son was going through a divorce, and his home came available, a two-story home, four-bedroom, three-bath. And so that's where we started the home. And women were coming in, and they were going, too. Unfortunately, about 2 years into it, propositions changed, and the county wasn't paying, and my husband Craig and I were paying a lot of money. It was more money than our own bills. And I'll take that back. We had a lot of people who donated, though. Thank you to anybody here who ever donated. It was awesome. Thank you for supporting Transition to New Life. Even though Transition to New Life is not still operating, three women, I rented another house. I met with this man, said, I want to rent. Everybody kept turning me down. I want to rent a house. Nobody rent a house to me to open this home. And I walked in this house and I told the man, I said, I'm just going to let you know it's for women in recovery. And I have really terrible credit. My husband has good credit. My mother has good credit. They'll back me up. And within 5 minutes, he said, no, he never ran a credit card. He says, I like you. I'm going to rent it to you. Unfortunately, things changed financially, but the three last women that lived in the house, this was a year ago, still live in that house. They now rent it. They now pay all the bills. They all have a job. They all have a vehicle. And they all have a life. nor sober. So it's really nothing I did. It was just the starting of something that God planted in my heart. I know I want to help somebody. I really don't know how to do it all the time. But friends and the fellowship like yourself, teach me and guide me and show me. And the doors opened in that area, and there was a lot of women who came through that house, and a lot of them are still sober. Either you want it or you don't. I can't force it on anybody. I can only be a good example. And sometimes I'm not even a good example. I might not drink, but I'm not still sometimes a good example. That's why I have to stay close to the program and be true to myself and know, you know, I'm not perfect. I'm not. I'm far from perfect. But I know right from wrong, and I have a conscience. And that's what keeps me going today. AA, my family, the fellowship, the transitional home, thought it would never happen, and it did. Anything's possible if you really try hard enough. And if you really want to quit drinking, you can do it. It is possible. There's a program here, and we'll help you. My name is Kimmy, and I am an alcoholic.